So we're already in the second day of the cycle. Oh,
today is the...
I still didn't do the first day of the cycle.
So jump on, it's pretty fast.
Yeah.
So Chaf Kislev is still part of the day that's celebrated of Yutes Kislev. So I figured it would be worthwhile to look at this very interesting episode in Chabad Chassidus, in which the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, the fifth Chabad Rebbe, went to Sigmund Freud. I thought it was like sort of tailor-made for our group, for our little discussion over here. So look at the first source over here, that it says that in Tafresh Samach Gimel, 5683, the year corresponding to, it would be like 1903, I think. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Shalom Dover, known as the Rashab of Lubavitch, had a problem of Nemichas Ruach. It seems to be what we would equate as depression. Lilo Seper Kvod Kedushas Bepratius, my father-in-law didn't tell me in detail, aval Lifnei Rabbanich Genesera, Hitonin Rabos, that what happened is that he complained to his wife, Shtirna Sara, quite a bit. Al Shachre Shanim Shalavoda, after many years of divine service, Becholzos, Ein Af Mida Achas Kidibai Lamahave. He hasn't been able to work out any of his character traits. Ve Ein Kol Skal Behir Etzlo. And concepts are not clear by him. Ve She'enu Yachol Lahamik Sichlo Be'ezi Inyan. And he can't focus properly on any union. And my father-in-law added, Zehaya ba'oto chor, if it was in that this winter, should I receive Ekshi Samek b'rayinosav, that after I saw him dwelling in his thoughts, ba'ofen shaya mesulak legamri min olam, that he was deep in thought, that totally not, you know, removed from cognizance. V'gam achari yitas kislev d'shana ha'hi, after the 19th day of the month of Kislev of that year, Sheishlo Shem Shemizem Muvan Goda Hafla Milas Mamado Matsovo Azafo Pichin Hisonen. So even though, despite the fact that his powers of concentration, that the Rebbe Rishab was known for expounding on teachings in a very, very deep way for oftentimes hours on end in a deep meditative state, still, he felt like he was missing something. He wasn't able to express something. He wasn't able to penetrate the concept in depth. Ubechorav ahu nasanu mipneze levin. So, because of this, the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rebbe Yosef Yitzchak, the father-in-law of the last Lubavitcher Rebbe, went to Vienna with his father, Rebbe Rishab. The Shol Be'atzas HaRofim, to go ask the Rofim, the doctors, what to do. Haya Etzel HaRofe HaYadua Freud. And he went to Sigmund Freud. Halo Amar Besibas Nemichas Ruach. And it would seem that Freud's diagnosis is, okay, we'll see it in Hebrew, I believe it's over here on the bottom. He says, "Amoach me." Look by footnote number 3. Amoach me sig masha lev inu yachol la'achil. That the mind understands what that which the leg cannot contain within it. V'alev inu meichil masha moach me sig. And moreover, the heart cannot contain with it what the brain understands. Or the brain. The problem is that his brain the understands what the heart cannot hope to contain within it. Valev eno mechil, and the heart cannot contain what the brain understands. And this is what was causing the great problem. Uvator Eitza, and what he said to do, Siva asher tias sviva shelo yafe, that he should create around himself a good environment. Yomudu dvarim v'diburav V'yirusha yivada lo al yadezeh l'man asher al yadezeh yor regesh rumus nafsho. That he should go, and the way I saw this understood is that that you should see that the chassidim are learning his teachings and are making that impact, and they're making an impact in the world, and that the svivus, that which surrounds him, you should see is making an impact. I heard Rabbi Yossi Jacobson reflecting on this. Yeah, it's funny because he spoke about this idea on Sunday night when I was at the Verbrengen for Yates Kislev in Marine Park. He spoke about this idea of the words making an impact and being appreciated. And then I heard him explaining this piece from this is the 7th Rebbe's journal we're looking at over here, the Rishimas, that where they found after the death of the 7th Rebbe, these notebooks where he would record all of his ideas. Ideas and thoughts, and this one are personal reflections and reminiscence and conversations that he had with his father-in-law. It's again fascinating to see that you have such an in-depth work, especially from a man. The 7th Lubavitcher Rebbe was somebody who he didn't have any confidants except for with really his wife. Everybody else was really kept at a certain sense of an arm's distance, and a very, very private person. So you don't see so much about the inner workings of his mind, only what he put out there. Whereas other great rabbis, they had confidants, they had journals that they kept, the people who spoke to them, who knew them. The Sefer Bavitcher Rebbe is much more of an enigma. Well, we understood what he wanted, we understood what he spoke about, but we didn't always get a sense of what his personal feelings. We knew what the Lubavitcher Rebbe wanted, we didn't always get a sense of who Menachem Mendel Schneerson was. Whereas other Rebbeim, oftentimes you had much more of an insight into that. So when they found these journals, the Rishimos, it's really fascinating to see where his mind was, what he was thinking, what he was writing in different points in his life, and the reflections that he had it, and the reminiscence that he had with in conversation with his father-in-law.
Now, why do you think that is that the 7th Rebbe was really concealed, so to say?
I'm not sure. It's a great question. I'm not sure. The 6th Rebbe was very, very expressive. The 6th Lubavitcher Rebbe was very, very expressive, kept journals and recollections and reflections, and saw a lot of his writing was very, very descriptive. He was an excellent, excellent writer. His Verbrengens had a very, very warm, homey type of feel. As opposed to the 7th Rebbe's Verbrengens were huge, because the Chassidus had grown tremendously. But the 6th Rebbe's Verbrengens, you would see oftentimes there would be like questions and answers in the middle of the gatherings. It was a fascinating study in comparison. So here we have an article from the journal Psychoanalytic Review. In the February 2000 issue, you can look it up. It's a great article itself. It's a good 30 or so pages. I only copied the pieces that were relevant to us. I copied the first page so that you could locate it if you'd want to go see it. It's volume 87. And they first gives an introduction to Chabad Chassidus. What's interesting, the author's note, that we have not been able to find any of Freud's files about Rashab or any letters about it. But at the same time, all of the correspondence and the records from that time, also we can't seem to find them either. So which is not such a great raya. But what
That really happens a lot with a lot of things.
Yeah, whoever, I remember somebody saying, I think it was on 1840, where there was an archaeologist on this podcast where he was discussing Judaism of antiquity, and he said, just because you don't have proof for anything that's not a proof that he doesn't exist. It just means that you don't have anything for it.
Yeah.
So, but what we do have.
But the whole world of like historians and archaeology love to just dismiss things if they don't have proof for it.
Right. Well, that's,
it's a little frustrating because like the actual like the stories and the stuff are a lot better than the history they try to fill in. A lot more interesting.
Right.
Well,
as with any discipline, a person has to understand what it is that they're listening to, where it's coming from, who's saying it, what the background and what its usage is, and what its usage isn't. As with any science, you have to know what its bounds are and what it's useful for. But what happens is that we live in this a generation of sound bites. So nobody really has the time or interest to really, as we would say, be ma'amik, to dwell into it. But we see that in our article, so this at this time in Rashab's life, there was a great deal of pressure which was going on. He was dealing with the maskilim. There was pressure from the Tsarist government. The Tsarist government. There was all types of different pressures in terms of dealing with all of the isms and the movements, Bundism, Zionism, communism that were starting to swirl about at this time as well. It was the 20th Yahrzeit of his father's death, and in the words of Schneider and Burke, he says, around this time, Rashab continuously complained to his wife that he was unable to study, he was unworthy, and that he was deficient in his emotional attributes. It's a little different from what we had read, but okay. By this, the Rebbe meant that his love for a fellow man and that his love for fear of God were not as they should be. He was overheard to cry out, how can I apply myself to my Hasidim? My Hasidim don't recognize me. He said, I have other ways, but I don't wish to use them. He's quoting this from Rebbe Rayatz, the Sixth Rebbe's Journal, published 1992, page 23. So, we go to page 43. We see that they did a great deal of work in the psychoanalytic journal trying to piece together what we have in terms of correspondence between Dr. Freud and the Rebbe, and as well, the rest of the article does some comparison between some Hasidic doctrine and some of Freud's writings as well, which is very, very interesting. But here we've seen this encounter, which, as we see, is pieced together from a number of sources. That the Rebbe said, the discipline of Chassidut requires that the head explains to the heart what the person should want, that the heart should implement the person's life, which the head understands. Freud says, how do you do this? Are not the head and the heart two great continents separated? Is not a great sea divide them? The Rebbe says, the task is to build a bridge that will span these two continents, to at least connect them with telephone lines and electric wires, so the light of the mind, the light of the brain should reach the heart. The Rebbe added, I must point out for Chassidim that from birth, the matter of the mind, the matter of the heart, is fit for study and for a voter for service. After further unspecified exchange between Freud and the Rebbe, his son recalls that Freud made the following diagnosis. This is what we saw in the Hebrew. The head grasps what the heart is unable to contain, and the heart cannot tolerate. The word that Freud used in German was vertragt, to carry or to bear. In German, vertragen, which means to endure, to hold. So the diagnosis can also be the head grasps what the heart cannot carry or bear. The head grasps what the heart cannot contain or endure. The Rosh Abbasan, the sixth rabbi, has himself offered another perspective. The heart comprehends what the heart cannot bear to hear, and the heart cannot assimilate what your mind comprehends. The implication is that Rosh Abbasan was upset to hear certain things, needing to find out a way to obtain relief from the overwhelming despondency. These depressed feelings moved him to seek relief from Freud. Freud's recommendation was that the rabbi try to remove himself from the sources of tension and continue his and change his venue. Freud hoped that the rabbi could be far removed from the source of his tension and depressive feelings. This advice is consistent with the recommendations Freud made to Bruno Walter circa 1904. Walter was at the time Gustav Mahler's young assistant conductor at the Vienna Court Opera. He was suddenly afflicted with a paralysis in his right arm, for which he consulted Freud. After seeing him, Freud told him to go for a holiday in Sicily. Nevertheless, the paralysis persisted. Freud then told Walter to forget about it and resume conducting. When Walter was remonstrated that this would not do, Freud said, "I will take that responsibility on myself." Following Freud's instructions, Rashad began to take long walks. He also visited with many synagogues and met people, many of whom did not know who he really was. During this time, his son recollects a fascinating aside. The rabbi always regretted that his father, Maharash, did not spend time with him or his chassidim, telling stories of the predecessors and other tzaddikim. But while in Vienna, the rabbi began to have dreams in which his father told him chassidic stories. During the long walks that Freud recommended, he in turn related these stories to his son. Freud also recommended that Rashab should be in good surroundings where people should learn from him and tell him how much they appreciated his scholarship so his spirits would lift. Freud said that Chassidim should seek to exalt the spirit of the Rebbe by studying intensely and delving more deeply into the writings. Moreover, they should inform him that they had done so. Then, akin to what he expected and instructed Bruno Walter, the Rebbe should go teach more. An interesting anecdote from Rashab's diary notes can shed more light on this. For the festive Purim holiday feast, people traveled to Vienna to be with the Rebbe Rashab. They came from Russia, Poland, and Hungary. The Russian Jews wanted to spend time alone with the Rebbe, but he refused. After an hour, the Rebbe's assistant brought a special delivery letter. His son opened the letter. It was a report on the status of Rashab's yeshiva in Russia. The document was a good report on how the yeshiva was functioning, say that the students were engaged in learning. Rashab felt better and then agreed to see the Russian Jews. This connects to what Freud told the Rebbe. He needed to hear good things. So for a moment, we'll understand for a second or two that Rabbi Rashab was complaining of depression, right? And the symptoms of depression, thinking about it now, I probably should have taken a copy of the DSM for us to look at together to understand, although anyone taking the IBC course will see some of the insides of this the DSM, that depression is a feeling in which a person feels like that it's not just feeling ungeblusen, sad. It's oftentimes a bleakness and a darkness which makes it impossible to do anything, to want to get out of bed, to want to accomplish anything. Mm-hmm. Now we see that the Rebbe was complaining of his inability to really be able to concentrate, to really be ma'amik, to deepen his understanding, to interact. It's koichus. We're repressed. So some of Freud's understanding after listening and hearing the Rebbe's day and what he did, getting, as we call it nowadays in the field, the biopsychosocial. He didn't call it that because he was starting all this and figuring this out. But we take the biopsychosocial, understand what his life is like. And Freud is saying, this seems to be that there's a lot, that you're carrying a lot, and you're internalizing a lot. So now they do a very interesting thing, that they look at some of the Rebbe's writings before Freud and after Freud and compare them to see in what way the Rebbe's methodology changed. So he says that the essays of Rashab, just before he visited Freud, were published, and in reviewing the writings exactly 1 year before Vienna, we can detect some of the interesting features that give us insight into the thinking process. These writings are qualitatively differently than those that appear after his visit to Vienna. The 1902 paper, Rashab quotes two seemingly contradictory verses from Psalms: "Worship God in joy, come before Him with song. Worship God in fear, rejoice with trembling." Rashab states in his paper that the essence of worship should be out of joy. The second verse seems to imply that fear is also necessary. Fear or awe, according to Rashab, seem to be the opposite of joy. In joy, the soul spreads out, widens the circle, so the joy permeates one's entire being. Fear, on the other hand, is a constriction of the soul. Rashab then proceeds to differentiate between the trembling that allows for expression of happiness on the outside, and joy, that is pervasive in all, allows for expression of happiness on the outside, is all pervasive and all encompassing. Both ingredients are necessary to properly come before God. To be just joyful runs the risk of frivolity, whereas more somber attitude allows for rejoicing in more humble and serious manner because it's permeated with godly light from above. Which is interesting because this is actually part of what the Tanya starts off with, those who are starting the cycle of Tanya, is part of the questions that he cites at the beginning of the book. In the first chapter, he asks that, okay, how is one supposed to serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu with too much joy but with not enough awe? To understand the mindset of the Rebbe, we need to tease apart his writings, find the underlying essence. One way by doing this is by deconstruction. So we're going to jump down to next page, because he talks a little bit about Derrida and deconstruction, which is a very important tool, just not for us right now. The Rashab cites in Exodus, God will bless you your bread and water. He's interested in conveying the message that we find several times in Tanya, the Zohar, that bread refers to Torah. The Tanya states, the Torah is clothed in the soul and the intellect of the person and absorbed with them. It's called bread for the soul. This is a famous statement it's in the fourth chapter of the Tanya. The Rashab states that bread is what connects the body to the soul. In other words, being able to study and learn is food for the soul. Why is he so preoccupied with the metaphor which he repeats this several times over the space of a few paragraphs? Rashab himself partially alludes to the reason. Towards the end of the same essay, he writes, "We know the evil inclination, sometimes it relates, referred to as an illness. The word for illness, machla, is the same letters as the word for bread, lechem, but in reverse order. For bread connects the soul to the body. Illness separates the body from the soul. We say that if one is blessed with bread, then sickness will be banished. Learning Torah banishes the evil inclination, transforms it into good. We look for a deeper psychological reason to why the Rashab was engrossed with the bread. In medieval and modern Hebrew, Mara, as part of the expression Mar Shchor, refers to depression. Rashab is trying to show us that by learning Torah, one can banish the evil inclination that causes depressive feelings. This is an importance of the verse for of understanding. Rashab's intellectual emotional distress at this point. He says, it's funny that Rabbi Rashab is talking about machla, is talking about sickness. And the sickness that he's trying to fight off with the Torah, but he's having a problem concentrating and learning. Yeah, so he finds that normally that if it's your garden variety sadness, then you know, the Torah should be able to help you. But when we're getting into depression, that he can't even study, so he can't bring any joy to himself. So he says he could not study, at least his satisfaction. Therefore, he felt stuck, became depressed, unable to do what he needed to overcome the situation. A visit to Vienna to see the famous Professor Freud seemed to be one step he could take to confront the depressive feelings, return to a stable, non-depressed condition. He said, look, he's talking about machla. Machla, lechem is machla. He keeps going, lechem should be Torah. And lechem should abate the machla. Lechem should be able to abate the problem. But the sadness is too much. The sadness is too strong, so which is why then he decided to go to seek analysis from Freud. So, what's funny is that then we see that he can compares it then with the writings after Vienna. So he says, we've chosen chosen parts of several essays to see some of the Rashab's thinking contrasted with the essays written prior to his visit to Vienna. While Rashab may be dealing with similar themes, happiness, sadness, bitterness, the post-Vienna papers are written more tightly and organized with a clearer transition from idea to idea. Right? If you think of how he describes the symptom, right? The symptoms were I can't seem to find this clarity. I can't seem to penetrate it. We know what happens oftentimes, if you remember, that with the psychoanalytic school, what we're looking for, of course, is insight again, right? We're looking for the idea is that if you can figure out what's going on, if you can figure out. Again, remembering how the psychoanalytic school is that if we can find the insight, that insight will unlock the key to the symptoms that you're having. CBT, DBT, all the BTs that are dealing with, oftentimes they're just working in terms of dealing with the symptoms qua the symptoms themselves, or giving skills to cope with the symptoms. Whereas depth psychology, where we have analysis, oftentimes we're not looking to cure the symptoms as they are appearing, but to get to the source. If we can figure out the source, the problem will ameliorate itself. So Freud's understanding, because he says it sounds, you know, that you're trying to deal with something bigger than what you can bear. It's too much. It sounds like it's too much for you. All the suffering that you hear about, it's too much for you. What you're trying to deal with. And what's happening is that quite possibly you're trying to fix this this issue that's too great for you to be able to deal with. So what does he say? What does he recommend? He recommends that you go out. He recommends leave the place. Stop trying to work on the problem. Try to work on the problem, and then also surround yourself with people who are speaking more positively, and that you're seeing that what you're doing is having an impact. Oftentimes, that's something that we will use nowadays as well. There's the idea of the reframe. The reframe, oftentimes, where someone would say, "Oh, I'm not able to accomplish anything," and we, like I said, the Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson, in reflecting on this piece, said that the Rebbe Rashab was saying, I don't feel as if there's any appreciation for what it is that I'm trying to do. So part of what the response was is, well, ask your Talmidim to tell you. And you say, well, isn't this like fishing for a compliment? It's not appropriate in polite American society. But we assume that everybody is just doing okay. They don't need to hear Yashikoyach. But I'll tell you from my experience as being a rabbi, and as well that I've heard from other rabbis, that no, when somebody comes in and says, you know what, that was nice, that point touched me, that idea made a difference to me, that it's very, very beneficial for the rabbi and for the teacher as well. That it's not assumed that everybody should just be functioning without any feedback. In fact, in corporate America, it's a big problem as well, that if you have a boss who insists that you do certain things without any feedback and just expect you to keep working without any feedback, and you don't really know how you're doing, what you're doing, or am I doing well, am I not doing well, it oftentimes will thrust a person into a place of depression. How do I know that I'm being effective? How do I know as a whole that what I'm doing has any point to it? So feedback is very, very important. So it would seem that these two therapeutic suggestions, three therapeutic suggestions, that to what Freud is advising the Rebbe, you know, leave where you are, get out of the situation, stop trying to solve this problem the same way over and over and over again. You can't beat off darkness with a stick, as we like to say. You keep trying to solve this problem by doing the same thing. It's just frustrating. It's driving you deeper. Number one. Number two. get some feedback, get some positive feedback. Much in the same way of the little the vignette that they brought news back that the Rebbe's yeshiva was succeeding. It was having an impact. It was being impactful. Number three was. Sorry, I just lost my train of thought. There was the move away from where you are. There was get positive feedback. And then try again. Remember, similarly like the Bruno Walter case where he said, go ahead and now do more. He said, well, and in the Bruno case, remember, he said that he couldn't, he was having this type of neurotic hysteria where he couldn't move his hand, right? The psychosomatic issue with moving his hand. And Freud said to him, okay, so go on vacation, don't think about it, and then just do it. Stop thinking about it so much. Just go ahead and do it. And we see what in the same way, and it worked. Similarly, he said, okay, so now just go teach. Just go keep on doing. So these three different things, because on one hand, the mind is getting caught up, much like muscle memory. If you ever try to think how to ride a bicycle while you're trying to ride a bicycle, you're going to fall off the bicycle. Yeah, your brain's going to get in the way. Don't overthink. Somebody sent a meme. I forget who it was, but I sent it to my family, and they all are like, truth, you know? So it said, stop overthinking about it. Nobody else besides you cares. There's oftentimes we get involved in our heads a lot, and we start thinking and overthinking and worrying about what will people think about this, about that. And in the end, really, the truth is that the person who cared the most about it was us. It was just us overthinking too much. So stop overthinking and just do it. And as a result, what happened? We see then that his post-Vienna papers are written more tightly and more organized with clear transition to idea to idea. If he was feeling muddled, and the depressed feeling is that everything feels like kind of blah, and you're sort of bumbling from one idea to the other without a clear definition, and that what is what the Rebbe was talking about in terms of his symptoms. That depression is sort of like this blasé, sort of like, distinctions aren't clear, you're not really understanding things very clearly. These are all in the symptoms of depression. So then, after this vacation, and after this encouragement, the Rebbe was able to, to teach more clearly. So then turn to page 49. In chapter 3, the Rashab quotes in Kuntres Eitz Chaim, which is a book published in 1904. Again, we see after Vienna, about how the yeshiva, that his yeshiva needs to run. He says, in chapter 3, Rashab quotes the rabbinic statement in the Talmud that the Torah is an elixir of life. Similar, interestingly, the word elixir also means a poison. It's the word sam. Rashab states that one can transform poison into elixir by drawing down influence from the infinite light. Because sickness comes from the translucent shell, a shell containing both good and evil, one needs to transform darkness into life, and the light and the bitterness of the translucent shell into sweetness. This transformation of the bitterness from sickness to health. The Rashab's preoccupation with this theme points to the issue that especially affected him. So this is fascinating, by the way, of course, because just to explain to you the novelty of what's happening, it sounds like we're reading a Torah journal, but we're reading actually a journal of psychoanalysis. So they're analyzing his writings. They are psychoanalyzing his writings. This is something that psychoanalysts will oftentimes do: consider the writings of an author and try to adduce, try to understand where they are, in their mental state. So he says that this occupation that the Rashab has with this idea of health and bitterness. Clearly, this idea is occupying space in his mind because it would seem that this is something that he's experiencing. He wanted to be sure that his students would strive for spiritual values, that they needed to understand the fine line separating illness from health, as well as how they need to utilize their emotional swings in order to reach higher spiritual levels. And you see that he's also teasing out over here the differences between emotional health and spiritual health. During the time that Rasha was in Vienna, we find many accounts of his helping widows, orphans, and others. He preached what he lives, that the way to reach the higher spiritual levels by doing community service, subverting the depressive feelings of bitterness into studying Torah, into acts of kindness. We see, again, this idea, the course, the concept of sublimation, which is another Freudian technique of using the unhealthy things and finding a way to use it in a healthier place. When we read chapters 25 and 26, we see how organized Rosh Hashanah actually was. The entire day's schedule is mapped out so that each student will know what is expected of him every hour of the day. This is very reminiscent of one of Freud's papers on the technique of the beginning of the treatment, which was published in 1913. By analogy, we see an exact schedule of the analyst was expected to do, clearly elucidated. So, this really is a very, very interesting study of when the Rebbe Rashab went to Freud and the impact that Freud had on the Rashab's thinking, and it would seem to deal with the depression that the Rebbe was experiencing. We see some of the analytic usages of analytic principles as well as one of my friends oftentimes refers to as good old-fashioned therapy. People like to use strings of abbreviations, CBT, DBT, ACT. So he calls it GOT. You have to use some more GOT. What's GOT? Good old-fashioned therapy. Good old-fashioned therapy. What's good old-fashioned therapy? Being there with a therapist, him listening, her listening, responding to what you're saying and hearing. Besides any of all the different techniques that emerge, just somebody being present and listening to you and offering a thought or two, oftentimes is very, very powerful. Without, this is Carl Rogers also as well, that without any of the fancy modalities. Good. And some sage advice, having a problem and you're getting down with it, go outside, go take a walk, or go do it a little differently. Another piece, don't give up on it. Number three, good feedback is healthy. We all need good feedback. And we see that it seemed to have helped snap the Rashab out of it, that his writing becomes much more clear, much more tight, and on top, away from that depression. And as well, he's expressing this to his students as well, the sense of health. If you want an interesting read, look up the rest of the article. It's available online. It's a really interesting read where then he's also he explains some of the foundations of Chabad Hasidic thought, and then also he experiments with different ideas, possibly that are comparable in Freud's papers that he delivered, and surmises maybe there was some influence back and forth between these two thinkers. So that was that, you know, and it was great to do this every Tuesday night. Hopefully, please God, we'll be able to continue in the next semester.